Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Shabbos Daf Nun Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to review a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We open up today's Gemara four lines from the top of Nun Tes Amud Aleph, and we find ourselves in the middle of a discussion. So just to recap the main point in order for us to be able to continue, and that is we saw a source on Daf Nun Ches that spoke about a bell whose clapper was removed, a bell that had become tome when it was complete, and upon the removal of the clapper, the source had said that the tuma remains. It still is subject to Kabbalah's tuma. In other words, the removal of the bell, of the clapper from the bell, was not the equivalent, let us say, of the vessel being broken. In the case of a vessel that had become tome, if you break it, so that is reason for it losing the tumah that it may have had. Here, when it comes to the bell, the removal of the clapper, we were taught, is not tantamount to its being broken. That gave rise to the question, well, of what use is it without the clapper? So we saw Abaye's approach and Rava's approach and Rabbi Yochanan's approach. Let us focus on that which Rabbi Yochanan said. Rabbi Yochanan said, well, even though the clapper has been removed, the bell is still fit to be used as a makeshift cup for giving a child some water to drink. In contrast with Rabbi Yochanan, we had also seen Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Hanina, who was echoing the same sentiments as Rava did, but we'll just focus right now on Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Hanina, who's second line from the top, whose name is underlined. He said that the bell whose clapper was removed is still useful in its original form. It still possessed its original purpose, and that is as a noise producer. You could take the clapperless bell and bang it against some pottery and it'll make noise, just like a bell is designed to do. The point of controversy between Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Hanina and Rabbi Yochanan could be explained or defined as the necessity, yes or no, of it producing or of functioning in its original capacity. This is called Me'ein Melocha Rishona. That's the Hebrew expression. Is that important for something to have Me'ein Melocha Rishona in order for it to retain its tuma status? According to Rav Yosef Chamina, only if the item retained its original function do we say that the tuma remains. If, in the case of the bell, it let us, for some reason, it's not capable of producing noise, so then even though it might have an alternative function as a cup, that would not be grounds for it maintaining its tuma. And that's because Rabbi Yossi says you need to have it doing me'ein melacha rishona. Rabbi Yochanan, on the other hand, said you don't need to have me'ein melacha rishona as long as it has some melacha, has some functionality. It has utility. It can be used as a cup. And as we mentioned already a number of times, but it needs emphasis for those who are new to the realm of Tumah and Tumas Kalim, in order for an item to Mekabel Tumah, it has to be classified as a Kli. And a Kli, we can say, is defined as something that has utility. In terms of the removal of the Tumah from a Kli that was already Tumah, we said that breaking the Kli is a means of removing the Tumah. When something happens to a kli and its utility is tampered with, does that remove the tumah? According to Rabbi Yochanan, no. The fact that its utility may have been changed doesn't remove the tumah as long as it has some utility. Now we ask a question, and you'll notice this is a long question. We have a long question marking opposite the Gemara text to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. A kushya or kasha is a kuf is encircled with a descending vertical dashed line, taking you down to practically halfway down the omid of Gemara. The Gemara asks, "Rabbi Yochanan lo boy me'ein malacha rishona? Does Rabbi Yochanan not require its utility in its original form? In other words, same role." V'hotanya, we have the following source. Now, by the way, it would seem appropriate to say that Rabbi Yochanan, in saying that you don't require main loch rishona, Rabbi Yochanan really is represents a stringency. In other words, the tumah remains even if it's not limited to its original function. But is that really so? Now, in order to appreciate the question, and this is the reason we have long question markings, is that many times the question doesn't come to a head until you get to the end of it. In this case, you can see that you have to wait till the end of the question, where you can see there's a dashed underlining that we've added. There the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan Omer, Af Omer Betomei Meis, Amo V'nasim Lachtenu. Without explaining that phrase right now, what is being said there is even outside the realm of Tumas Medris, we'll tell you that there's no Kabbalah's Tumah unless it is it fulfills its original function. Now we'll go step by step through the long question. There's a lot of information, a lot of material here that for many of you may be new, and let's try to make some sense of things. So the Gemara asks, is it really so that Rabbi Yochanan doesn't require mi'ein malacha rishona v'ha tanya? There is a posuk, and this posuk is in the realm of what's called tumas medris. Tumas medris is tumah that's imposed by certain kinds of people. For example, a mitzora or a zav, a nida, a zava. These are different people. Let's say the nida and the zava are women that have different types of blood flows coming from them, what we call tumah yotze migufa. They create tumas medris. That means that chairs and beds that they recline on, or that they sit on or recline on, become tomei, to the extent they become an ava tumah, which is somewhat very unusual in the realm of tumah, where the woman herself, she is an ava tumah. And there's instead of a descent in tumah level, there's a lateral tumah production, lateral level tumah production, where an ava tumah replicates the tumah status of ava tumah onto something else. The tumas medris, and it's very interesting to note for English speakers, the word medris sounds a lot like the word mattress, and that's it's an easy way to remember what kind of tumah we're talking about. What would be if a zav sits on something that's not designed for sitting? Will that also become tomei tumas medris, become an ava tumah? So that's what is discussed in this source. The pasuk that we just read, v'chol kli asher yeshev v'lo v'chulei, that's the pasuk. Yochol, would it be kofa se'ah? The Yoshev Aleo. A saw is a measuring device, a measuring vessel. Imagine a basket that happens to hold a quantity of a saw. Saw is the name of a quantity. Likewise, kofa tirkav. Kofa means inverted. Inverted a saw measure, or kofa tirkav. Tirkav is another measure. It's 3 kav, it's a half a saw. He inverted this measure. Again, you can just imagine a smaller basket that holds a tirkav. He flipped it over so that the bottom is now facing up. V'yoshav oleo. And the tomei individual, the zav, sat on it. Yehei tomei, will this saw or tirkav, these baskets, will they mekabel tumas medris? Talmud loimar, the pasuk says, v'chokli asher yeshev olov hazav.
From this pasuk we learn, mi shemiyuchad liyeshiva, only things that are designed for sitting are makabel, the special tumas medras. Yotza zeh, to the exclusion of the se'ah or the tirkav baskets, that if, let us say, imagine someone sits on that, and you needed it for measuring. You know what you would say? Let's go over this line again. Yotza zeh means to the exclusion. The pasuk comes to exclude from tumas medras the se'ah or the tirkav she'omrim lo. We would say to someone sitting on that, Amod, get up, v'nasim lachtenu, so that we can use it for our needs. This is in stark contrast to say, let's say, someone that's sitting on a chair. You're not going to tell someone sitting on a chair, get up from the chair, and I need it for some more specific purpose. A chair is designed for sitting on, so it's being used for its design purpose. So there's no reason for someone to tell someone else, get up off the chair. However, if someone's sitting on a basket that's used for measuring, it's quite likely and it's reasonable. It's reasonable to tell someone, get off the basket. What are you sitting on the basket for? I need it for its designed purpose. So in this source, you can see the focus on the use of an item for its designed purpose. Rabbi Elazar Omer, b'medrasos omrim, only in the realm of Tumas Medris do we say, Amod v'nasim lachtenu, and therefore, a zav would sit on a sa'ah basket, the basket does not become Tomei Medris. The Ein Omrim Betome Mace Amod Vinase Malachtenu. But with regard to the realm of Tumas Mace, we don't apply that same principle, which basically means that Tumas Mace can be communicated to all vessels, even if they are not designed for the mace. That's Tumas Mace's defilement as a result of the dead. And here we come to the main point. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Af Omer Betome Mace, Amod Vinase Malachtenu. Even with regard to Tumas Mace, we would apply this principle of if it's not being used for its specific purpose, then it would not be Makabel Tumas Mace. Let us take a look at the Rashi in the wide lines. V'ein omrim le'inyan av hatuma shel tumas mace. Let us say a person came into contact with a corpse. He is an av hatuma. So, as such, he communicates tuma further to other things. So we say, regarding Ava Tuma of Tumas Mace, we don't say Amod V'nasim Lachtenu Klomar Im Nitmo. If something became Tomei V'nishbar and it broke, let's say an article came into contact with a corpse, so it becomes Tomei to the extent of being classified as a primary level Tuma, Av HaTuma, and that article breaks, V'yodeu Roy L'Melocha Be'almo, and it still has some function. She'ein me'ein melocha rishona. That's not similar to its original role. Tomei. That item is still Tomei. V'lo amrinon, and we don't say amud v'nasim lachtenu rishona. V'kev v'delo chozi lochiei tor. And we don't look at it and evaluate, can it still produce its original function? And if it can't, it therefore is tor. We don't say that. The kol shekein de betchilas tuma ein omrim, and all the more so with regard to its original absorption of tuma, we don't say amud v'nasim lachtenu rishona de neimo, so as to suggest im eino miyuchod lemeis lo yekabel tumas meis. Dor kli meisik sif. The pasuk, when it talks about tumas meis, it only talks about kli meisim, which means functionality, utility. Regardless of whether it's a utility that's focused on the meis, some type of vessel designed for meis, for the use with the dead, that is irrelevant. So that's Rebbe Lozer's approach. Rebbe Yochanan, though, was much more lenient, and he says that in the case of Tumas Meis, if a vessel had come into contact with an Avatuma of someone that was Tomei because of his contact with a corpse, or let's say a vessel came into contact with a corpse, and the vessel broke, and it still has some function, but not its original function, Rabbi Yochanan will tell you that it loses its tumah. That even with regard to tumas meis, we apply this principle of amod v'nasim lachtenu. Again, if we didn't make it clear till now, it's not too late. The term amod v'nasim lachtenu is used as a concept. Literally, it means get up, so that we can use it for its design purpose. So that becomes a concept, that when a vessel undergoes some type of change through its being broken, and it doesn't fulfill its original role, according to Rabbi Yochanan, even in the realm of Tumas Meis, it will lose its Tumah status. So we see that Rabbi Yochanan is very concerned not only with regard to Tumas Medrash, that something is used in its design capacity, but even with regard to Tumas Meis, if it's not in it, if it doesn't fulfill its original designed role, it no longer will be makabel tumah. So, bearing this in mind, if you go back to Rabbi Yochanan, where he appeared in a diamond, three lines from the top, and he said that the clapperless bell is still tumah because it can be used for giving as a makeshift cup, but that's not what its original purpose was. It was originally as a bell, a sound producer, not a cup. So why then would Rabbi Yochanan say the removal of the clapper doesn't remove the tumah? It ought to be the reason for the removal of the tumah. The Gemara answers, Epuch Komaisa. You know what? We have to switch around the original names. That means you go back to the second line and third line from the top. You had Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina. He assumes what Rabbi Yochanan says, and Rabbi Yochanan assumes what Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina says, making Rabbi Yochanan, in fact, concerned with it still being a sound producer. It's Roy Lakishol Gabi Cheres. So that following the spirit of the long question, Rabbi Yochanan is now presented as, in fact, insisting on the item producing its original function. The Gemara asks, "Umay choses da'afchis komaisa epoch basraisa? What makes it? What do you see in that motivates you to switch around the original presentation, whereby you're making Rabbi Yochanan insistent on original sound, on original utility? Why not switch around the last presentation? We have Rabbi Lozer and Rabbi Yochanan making Rabbi Yochanan making him conform, or making transposing Rabbi Yochanan with Rabbi Lozer, and Rabbi Yochanan thereby is not concerned with original functionality. The Gemara answers, and this is also an example of a long answer. Note, we have a tough encircle to the immediate right hand side of Mortes with a descending vertical dashed line. All of these lines will form the answer. And again, like we've said on a number of occasions, you'll have to really wait till the end in order to see the answer. So the Gemara says, Hoshaminon le l'Rebbe Yochanan deboi me'ein melocha rishona. We have heard Rabbi Yochanan insisting on the ability to execute original utility in order for tumah to be maintained. In other words, we know Rabbi Yochanan to be lenient. And what do we mean lenient? That tumah will be maintained only under these circumstances, that it produces its original utility. The boy, once again, let's read that. Ha shaminon le Rabbi Yochanan de boy me'ein melacha rishona. Disnan. We have the following Tanaic source. It says, sandal shel behema shel mateches tome. An animal shoe, we can call a horseshoe, that's made of metal, is something that's mekabel tuma. Lemai chazi, of what use is a sandal shel behema? Omar Rav, you'll see here we have three explanations as to why a sandal shel behema of mateches is mekabel tuma. So Rav says it has use. It's roi lishtois boi mayim b'milchama. It's useful as a makeshift cup in war. People would take their animals out into war, and if the horseshoe gets detached, he can still use the horseshoe as a makeshift cup. Rabbi Chanina Amar roi losuch boi shemen b'milchama. It's useful for containing oil that you might use for smearing, for anointing yourself, or smearing on yourself. And Rabbi Yochanan Amar b'shah sheboreach min hakrav, when a person is in krav is battle, when he's boreach means running away from battle, manicho beraglov verotz al kitzim v'al barkonim, he can put this animal shoe on his own feet. And that will protect him from thorns and thistles. He can run on otherwise difficult surfaces while wearing this as a shoe. Now, we've dashed underlined this because this is the whole point. You see that the explanation of the sandal shebehema is being mekabel tuma because, as in Rabbi Yochanan's opinion, it still functions as its original purpose. Its original purpose was a shoe for the animal. Well, it's now functioning as a shoe, just so happens, for you, for the person. We should point out just a detail that we overlooked before. As far as the sandal shebehema and its kabbalas tuma is concerned, being that it's made as a shoe for an animal, that's not reason for its being mekabel tuma, as Rashi says, because there's no concept of tachshit lebehema. This is a point we've mentioned in the past, but we're just repeating it now. So that as a behema function, as an item of utility for a behema, that's not reason for its mekabel as tuma. So what is its reason for mekabel as tuma? So we went through three reasons. And the main point for us was to see Rabbi Yochanan saying that since it functions in its original capacity, that's why it's mekabel tuma. And it's based on this that we had to insist on switching around at the second and third lines from the top of this Amid, Shitas Rabbi Yochanan with Rabbi Yosef Chanina, why the bell whose clapper is removed is still mekabel tuma, or the tuma that it may have absorbed when it was complete remains on it, is because it's still produces noise. It still functions in its original noise-making capacity. At this point, the Gemara wants to see the differences between the three opinions that we just explained. The Gemara asks, "My bain Rav Rebchina." Rav was number one, Rebchina was number two. "Iko binayu demois." Imagine the horse shoe or the animal shoe that is filthy or disgusting. So, according to Rav, it won't be mekabel tuma because you wouldn't drink from it. But according to Rabbi Chanina, the fact that oil is in something that's disgusting, it doesn't ruin the oil per se, and you could still use it for that, so it would still have use. And the Gemara continues, Bein Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi Chanina, the difference between these two opinions would be Iko Beinayu de Yokir. Yokir means heavy. If it's heavy, so according to Rabbi Chanina, well, it still can hold the oil, but according to Rabbi Yochanan, it won't be mekabel tuma because a person wouldn't use it as a shoe. He can't run with it if it's heavy. And therefore, as we explained before, it doesn't fulfill its original purpose. Therefore, it won't be mekabel tuma. We continue in the Gemara, Velo Be'ir Shelzov. A woman is not to go out into the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim while wearing an ear shelzov. My Be'ir Shelzov, what is this item? Rabba Baruchan Rabbi Yochanan, Yerushalayim Didavo. Jerusalem of gold. Didavo, Davo is gold. Continuing on the top of Amid Beis, Kid'ovad Le Rabbi Akiva Lidvisu. as Rabbi Akiva made for his wife. In Maseches Nedarim, there's a very famous story of Rabbi Akiva marrying the daughter of Kalba Savua. It was a type of, we'll call it, they seem to have eloped. And Rabbi Yochanan was a very poor individual, and he said that he expressed his desire that if it could only be, he would want to make this for his wife, and he eventually did. He made a ear shelzov. This is a type of ornament that a woman wore, that it had the image of the old Jerusalem skyline on it. That's why it's called Yerushalayim Dedavo. Tono Rabbanan. The Tanaic source says, Lo Teitzei Isha Be'ir Shelzov. A woman should not go into the Rishus HaRabim with this ornament. Ve'im Yotzesa Chayavis Chatos. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir is very extreme, and he says that as far as he's concerned, that's tantamount to carrying it out into the Rishus HaRabim, and therefore it's a Torah level violation, and she'd be Chayav a sin offering if she did so inadvertently. V'chachomim omrim lo teitzei v'im yotzesa p'tura. The Chachamim say there is a rabbinic restriction in wearing it. She should not wear it out, because if she does, it will be, it's not a Torah violation, because after all, as far as the Chachamim are concerned, it's not viewed as a masui, as a burden, it's a tachshit. It's an ornament, and that is something that on a Torah level one is allowed to wear. Rabbi Lezer Omer, Yotza Ishabir Shelzov Lechatchila. Rabbi Lezer says she is allowed to, as a first choice, to go right ahead and wear it as a decorative item and wear it out into the public thoroughfare on Shabbos. B'mai Komifligi. What is the basis of the Machlokes? Rabbi Meir Sovar, Masuihu. Rabbi Meir says that the Ir Shelzov is viewed as a mere burden and not a tachshit. Rabbonon Savri Tachshitu. It is a tachshit, and that's why it's okay for her to wear it out on a Torah level. However, they restricted on a rabbinic level. Dilmo shafu machvi le vasi lasuye. She might slip it off. Shafu to slip it off, umachvi, and show it to her friends. And in the course of showing it, she might end up walking with it four amos in the Rishus HaRabim, and that is a Torah violation. So we preempt that by saying don't wear it out in the first place. For Belozer Sovar, what kind of woman is customary in wearing this type of expensive ornament? Isha Hashuva, a woman of importance, of rank, of distinction. The Isha Hashuva lo mishafu machvi. Women of importance don't show off their things. They don't slip off their jewelry to show their friends. So there's no fear in the first place of anything happening. As we go on in the Gemara, we will notice that we have a new marking, new geometric form indicating a series, and on the side we have a note, the Mivneh, the structural note, features the bow tie, Pritim Shelo Huskru V'Mishnah. We will be emphasizing articles, jewelry, that were not featured in the Mishnah, but that the Gemara makes note of. And under our Noseh heading, we've featured Klila. That's the upcoming ornament. It's something that was worn on her forehead that extended from ear to ear. It's a type of headband, if you will, that extended from ear to ear. And we'll know two kinds, anischa and aruksa. One is anischa is something that is metallic band, was made of gold or silver, something that's metallic, gold or silver. That's the nischa, and then there's the aruksa, is a band that's made of woven material. We have gold strands woven together with material and other precious stones. As we look in the Gemara, you'll notice there's an Aleph and a Beis to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. This represents two versions of the Gemara presentation. So now, focusing on the Gemara, we go to the bow tie, Klila. Rav Osar Ushmuel Shori. And of course the issue is, can the woman wear this on Shabbos into the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim? Rav says no, Shmuel says it's okay. The Anischo, if it's the metallic one, that it's completely metallic, Kule Ama Lo Pligi, the Osir, all are in agreement that it is forbidden. Ki Pligi, the Aruksa. The controversy comes up when you're dealing with the Aruksa one, that's the combination of metallic with material. Mor Sovar Anischo Iker, Rav will hold that the Rav, who is restrictive, says that the metallic part of it is the main thing, and therefore it's usur. Oh, more sober, aruksa ikur. The and Shmuel, who is lenient, says that the main part of it is the material part. And being that that's the case, it doesn't have significance, and there's no fear that she's going to take it off to show her friends. Rav Ashi masni lukula. Rav Ashi presents this distinction, but in a lenient fashion. The aruksa, the kuleyama lo pligi, the shori. According to Ravashi's version, even Rav will agree that if it's a woven metallic material combination, everyone will agree it's okay. Ki pligi danisha. The machlokis Rav and Shmuel is around the one that's this klila that's totally metallic. Mor sovar dilma mashafu machvi vasi vasuye. Rav holds she might slip it off, show it to her friends, and end up carrying it in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. Umor Sovar, Shmuel will tell you, Ma'an Darkul Amepak B'Klila, what kind of woman is customary in wearing this ornament? Isha Chashuva, a woman of distinction. Isha Chashuva Lo Shofa Machfia, women of importance do not slip off ornaments to show their friends. Omarle Rav Shmuel Bar Chano Rav Yosef. The Feirush Amris Lon Mishmei de Rav Kli Lo Shori. So Rav Shmuel tells Rav Yosef, you told us explicitly that Kli Lo is okay. You notice here we're citing Rav, and Rav's name appeared above, so that it would approach would fit best according to the Rav Ashi version, where a klila of aruksa, even Rav said was okay. Omru le l'Rav, it was told to Rav, also gavra rabo aricho l'nahardo, a great man who happens to be very tall, arrived in Nahardo umitla, and he's also lame. Vidorash, and this tall, great man who is lame taught, publicized, or ruled Kli Lo Shori. You'll notice we have a bracketed section. If we skip the bracketed section momentarily, the tall, lame man, we will discover in the brackets, is Levi. And if you skip the bracketed section, you could see Dorash Levi ben Nahardo, Kli Lo Shori. Levi ruled in Nahardo that the Kli Lo was around there, allowed. And that's the story, that's the information that was communicated to Rav. Now, in the brackets, and we've indicated this on the side under our Nosei heading, Nosei b'sograyim, in the brackets, Levi ba l'Bavel, Levi's arrival in Bavel. Levi came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, and there's a story behind that, and that's featured in the bracketed section. Following the bracketed section, we have diamonds around the word Dorash. We have different Rabbonim that paskin that Kli Lo Shori, that the Kli Lo is allowed. And in this section of Gemara, we're not going to get involved with the details of what kind of Kli Lo, but rather that there is a there are those that the rule that it's allowed. Now, all that having been said, let's go over the bracketed section. This continuation of the story, where they told Rav that a great man came from Eretz Yisrael to Nahardo, and he's lame. Omar in the brackets here. Omar. Rav said, "Man gavra rabo aricho didla." Who fits this description of being a great man who's very tall and is limping? Levi. Oh, that's Levi. Levi was a very well-known Talmudic figure who we're talking about, an individual who lived at the transition period between the end of the Mishnayos period, the end of the Tanaic period, and the beginning of the Amoraic period, where several outstanding luminaries that lived at this time. Some others that may be familiar to you include Bar Kappora and Rebbe Chia, and here we're having Levi. These are people that authored Tanaic sources or edited Tanaic sources known as brises. You have the expression throughout the Shas, Tana de Bei Rebbe Chia, Tana de Bei Levi, Tani Bar Kappora, indicating that they had taught brises, Tanaic sources. Rav was also at this period of time. In fact, in place, certain places in Shas, you see the expression Rav Tanahu Upalig. Rav has a Tanaic status. All that having been said, we continue in the Gemara. Omar, Rav, said, "Who is this great man?" And he said, "It's Levi." Shmamino, and from this, Rav concluded, "Noch Nafshe de Rebbe Office." The great Rebbe Office apparently died. And as a result of his death, V'yosef Rabbi Chanino Bereisha, Rabbi Chanino then assumed the position of Rosh Yeshiva. And we should mention, and the Gemara will make reference to this a little bit later, that Rabbi Chanino was actually appointed by Rabbi Yehuda Nasi to succeed him as being Rosh Yeshiva. It just so happened that there was a Rabbi Office at the time who was older than Rabbi Chanino, and therefore he was given precedence to assume that position. But upon his death, upon the death of Rabbi Office, Rabbi Chanino assumed the position of Rosh Yeshiva. And when that happened, Velohave Le Inish Lelevi Lemesiv Gabei, Levi, who was also a very great individual, he had no one to continue to learn with. In other words, while Rabbi Office was in the Rosh Yeshiva position, so Levi was learning with Rabbi Chanino. But when Rabbi Office passed away, Rabbi Chanino assumed the Rosh Yeshiva position, so Levi was left with no one to communicate with, to learn with. The Ka'asi Lahachan, he came here to Bavel. The Gemara asks, the Dilma Noch Nafshe de Rabbi Chanino, Rabbi Office Kidikoi Koi. Maybe, and how does Rav come to all of these conclusions just by Levi's appearing here in Bavel? Maybe what happened was Rabbi Chanino passed away, and Rabbi Office, he continued living. V'lohavi le'inish le'levi le'meisiv gabei v'kosi l'ocha. And with Rabbi Chanino's demise, so Levi had no one to be with, to learn with, and he came here to Bavel. The Gemara answers, and the Gemara has two stages to this answer, and we also have a long answer marking. You can see the tuf encircled the immediate right hand side of the Gemara test with a descending vertical dashed line. The Gemara says, "Im Isa de Rabbi Chanino Shachiv." If that's what happened, like the suggestion we just had, then Levi, the Rabbi Office, make have a kayafle. Levi would have been subservient to Rabbi Office. Levi wouldn't have left Eretz Yisrael. Levi would have continued there, remaining under the guidance, the supervision of Rabbi Office. Obviously, not so with regard to Rabbi Chanino. So that with Rabbi Chanino's assumption of headship of Rosh Yeshiva, Levi was not going to remain there. He wasn't going to be under the leadership of Rabbi Chanino, being that Levi was no less an individual. V'su de Rabbi Chanino lo sagi de lo molech. And furthermore, to suggest, like the Dilma stated, that Rabbi Chanino died and Rabbi Office continued in his position as Rosh Yeshiva without Rabbi Chanino taking over, that is also unlikely. We'll call it an impossibility. When Rabbi was on his deathbed, he announced, Chanino Rabbi Chamo Yosef Barosh. He appointed Rabbi Chanino to succeed as Rosh Yeshiva. His name is Chanino Rabbi Chamo. That's Rabbi Chanino. He, Yosef Rosh, he shall sit in the chair of the Rosh Yeshiva. Uksiv behuba tzadikim, regarding the righteous, like someone like Rabbi, it says, "Vatigza urme v'yokam loch." The
the tzaddik proclaims, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu fulfills his desire. So that Rabbi Chanan had to assume the Rosh Yeshiva position. Therefore, Rav was able to come to this conclusion. The fact that Levi showed up here in Bavel, it must be that he couldn't remain in Eretz Israel, being that he had no one to be with, and he wasn't going to continue under the supervision, under the leadership of Rabbi Chanina, being that Levi was at least Rabbi Chanina's equal. The diamonds, as we pointed out earlier, are additional rulings regarding the Klila. Dorash Levi ben Nahardah, Klila Shari. And he ruled in Nahardah that the Klila was allowed to be worn. Nafik Estrin Va'arba Klili Mikula Nahardah. And 24 different Klila wearers emerged from Nahardah. Dorash Rabo Bar Avua ben Mechuzah. Mechuzah is another place. He ruled Klila Shari. Venofku Tamni Sori Klili Mechada Mavua, and 18 Klila wearers emerged from one alleyway. As we continue in the Gemara, another bow tie shape appears around the word Kamra, and under our Nose heading, we featured Kamra and Rasuka. That's the third example that will follow in a few lines. So, Rabba. Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav Shmuel, Kamra Shori. It's a type of important type belt. Iko Diamri Da Ruksa, V'Omar Rav Safra, Midiravi Atalis Musevis. Some say that Kamra mentioned here is the fabric interwoven with metal. That's the Aruksa. We saw this term above under the Klila discussion. And Rav Safra says that the permission to wear the Kamra is like we permit the Talis Musheves. Rashi, a number of lines above from where we are, he says, Midiav Atas Musheves Davi Tachshiv Sharia. It's a decorative ornament, and it's allowed. Ulemishlaf achvinami lo chashinon. As far as pulling off and showing people, we're not worried about that. Shein derech latir ezoro b'shuk v'iplu begodov. Here we're talking about a belt that helps to support his clothing, so we're not afraid he's going to take it off to show his friends, thereby resulting in his clothing falling off. The Gemara continues with another opinion of what this is, and we see we've used the double underline to highlight these two different presentations. V'iko d'amri d'anischa. Others say that the kamra that we're allowing here is the metallic one. V'omer of safra midi d'have a'avnei shel melochim. It says it's just like we would allow kings to wear their belts. It's made of it's totally metallic. And Rashi adds a concept: the chol Yisrael b'nei melochim, all Jews are worthy to be considered like princes, and therefore it's within reason that a Jew would wear a kamra de anischa. The Gemara continues, Omar le Ravino Ravashi, kamra ilui hamaino mai. Hamaino is we'll assume for right now it's a type of standard belt. So Ravino's asking, what would the din be of someone wearing a kamra on top of his hamaino? Omar Le, so Rav Ashi responds, Trei Himayna Kamris. Are you suggesting two belts? Rashi presents two opinions as to how to understand this, but the explanation that Rashi prefers is that Rav Ashi is saying it is usur. One is not allowed to wear one belt on top of another. Wearing it out on Shabbos like that would be tantamount to carrying out the upper one. Omar Rav Ashi, Hai Rasuka. Rashi explains Rasuka is Chatichas Me'il Rechovata, some type of material, a piece of wide coat. So, the Rasuka, I is le mefar chaisa, these are straps that enable it to be attached to other garments that you're wearing. So shari, it would be allowed. So the mafrechaisa will keep it from falling off.
The Elo, if it's just cloaked upon you, wrapped upon you, but it doesn't have these straps, then osir, it will be forbidden. Velo bekatla. My katla. What is katla? What is katla of the Mishnah? There's a point that is not 100% clear to me at this point in the Gemara, but it is interesting to note that the term katla was mentioned in the Gemara back on Daf Nun Zayin Omid Beis at the top line, and there it was presented as a type of wide strap that's attached to a type of bib article of clothing, of fabric that descended upon a person's chest. Here the Gemara the Mishnah mentions katla, and here the Gemara is asking what is that, and the approach here seems to be something different than the use of the word katla there, but that doesn't necessarily pose a difficulty. There are terms that could be used that have double meanings, and depending on the context it'll have a different explanation. So the prohibition of wearing of this thing, this katla, is a manketa pori. Rashi, manketa pori, he presents us once again with a French word, and it's a retract the what I thought was a problem is actually not a problem at all. In fact, my mistake. But Rashi explains it here just like we did explain it back on Daf Nun Zayin Amud Beis at the top. It's a wide strap that's attached to another piece of material that extends over one's chest. That's Manketa Pori. Just with that expression, Manketa Pori, we are seeing here for the first time in the Gemara. Continuing, Nizamim. The Mishnah said, Velo b'Nizamim. Which Nizamim are forbidden? Nizmei Ha'af. These are nose rings. Those are not permitted to be worn out on Shabbos. Rashi points out this is in contrast with ear rings. Those are mutter to be worn out because to remove them involves much more difficulty than the removal of a nose ring. And with the case of the nose ring, there is the fear that she might remove it to show her friends. As we continue in the Gemara, Velo b'tavas sheino la'choisim. The Mishnah mentioned that she's not allowed to wear a plain type ring, meaning a ring without a seal on it. Seals mentioned in the Gemara and the contents of rings were often used in what maybe some of us are familiar with, sealing wax, where an imprimatur was made by depressing a ring upon some type of molten material, leaving a seal. That's a choisim in the context of rings. So the Mishnah says that she is not allowed to wear a ring without a choisim, and we said that if she were to do it and walk out with Shusha Rabin, she would be ptura. It wouldn't be considered a Torah level violation. It is considered an ornament, a tachshit. Now, we want to infer from this, though, ha yeshala choisim chayeves. If the woman were to wear a ring with a signet on it, it would be a Torah level violation. It's not considered a tachshit, rather it's considered a masui. Almo lav tachshit hu. We would conclude then from this inference that a tavas shi yeshala choisim is a masu, it's not a tachshit. Ah, viro minu, but we have a contradiction, and we present a Tanaic source that will show us to the contrary. And once again, like we've done many times in the past, just focus on the dashed underlining for a moment. You see tachshite noshim, and at the next line, bein shiyeshala choisim. So we see that women's jewelry includes yesh alei choisim, contrary to the inference we're making from our Mishnah. On the side of the Gemara, under our Nosei Mivneh heading, you can see we feature a triangle, And in the course of the Gemara, these triangles will appear. These are deos beishuv stira. These are opinions on how to resolve the contradiction. Itavas isha sheshala choisim avetachshin. A woman's ring with a signet on it, does that constitute a tachshit, which would make it all right on Shabbos on a Torah level, okay? Or if it's not a tachshit, it would be a Torah level violation. Okay, that having been said, we continue in the Gemara. From the Mishnah, we inferred that Tavas Sheshala Choisim is not a Tachshit, Viromin, who we raise a contradiction from the following source. Tachshite Noshim Temeim. Women's jewelry are Makabal Tumah, Vilain Tachshite Noshim. And we give you a list of different Tachshitim. Katlos, Nizomim, Vitabos. Tabos are rings. Vitabas, the Tabas that we spoke about, that are Makabal Tumo, that are Tachshite Noshim, Bein Sheyesh Alechoysim, Bein Shein Alechoysim. Whether it has a signet on it or not. Venizme, Ho'af, and nose rings. You might notice that the next word has a Vov attached with Ve'omar. For the time being, I would like to read it without the Vov. Read it as Omar. In other words, Omar Rebbe Zera. Rebbe Zera is coming to resolve the contradiction, the stira. And to the basis of my explanation here, I found in the Rabbeinu Hananel, you can see 5 lines from the bottom. We have a little double star to make it easier to find. Umeshani Rebbe Zera. And Rebbe Zera answers. So that we have here Rebbe Zera is offering an explanation. For the resolution of this contradiction. It might be noted that the Rabbi Nachman himself has a seemingly say a more elaborate or a seemingly different presentation at first glance, but for our purposes, it makes the reading much easier if we just were to read this without the Vav, as Omar Rebbe Zera. Rebbe Zera resolves this contradiction. Lo kashya. Ha Rebbe Nechemya ha Rabbanon. There are 2 sources at hand, and they are actually offered by 2 different Tanoim. The inference from our Mishnah is in accordance with Rebbe Nechemya, who would say it's a Masui, and the source that we say Tachshite Noshim, that the signet ring of a woman is considered ornamental and is therefore allowed on Shabbos, that would be in accordance with the Rabbanan. Desanya, we have the following source. Now, before we go on in the source, we have to go back to the Rabbeinu Hananel, who sets up this resolution as talking about a tabas shel almug v'choismo shel mateches. We're talking about a ring that's made of almug is a type of wood, and the signet is made of a metallic substance. So, let us continue in the Gemara, and with all of this information in mind, we'll then point out the resolution. We didn't mention, but that Rebbe Zera is the first of several resolutions. We mentioned that in the context of our note on the side. In addition to Rebbe Zera, at the top of Daf Samach Omer Aleph, you'll notice Rava and Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok also offering resolutions. So we want to discover right now Rebbe Nechemya and the Rabbonon Tesanya, the following Tanaic source. He shel mateches v'choismo shel almug. If you have a he is a pronoun referring to the ring. The ring is made of metal, and the signet is made of almog, is a type of wood, tmeah. So it will makabel tuma. He shall almog v'chosim shamateches. If the basic ring is made of wood and the signet is made of metal, tahora. It is tahora, and that's because the emphasis is placed on the ring. This is the opinion of the Tanakhama, and in this case, the ring is made of wood, and it's called pshute kliyetz. It's pshute means it's an entity that doesn't have a receptacle area. Pshute, literally flat, but here we're talking about a ring. But nevertheless, the ring doesn't hold anything.
So the Tanakama's opinion is that you base the tumah capacity on what the ring is made of. If the ring is made of metal and the signet is made of wood, it's makabel tumah, because when it comes to metal, the fact that it's lacking a base kibul, the fact that it's pshute klimatris, doesn't make a difference. It is still makabel tumah. Rabbi Nechemya mitama. Rabbi Nechemya says in this last, it says that it will, it's not tahora, where you have the ring is made of wood and the choysim is made of mateches. Rabbi Nechemya is mitama, shoy Rabbi Nechemya omer, betabas haloch achar choysma. Rabbi Nechemya says, with regard to rings, you look at the signet. The ikur of the ring, as far as he is concerned, is the choysim. And it's not the normal way of women to wear signet rings. And therefore, it's a masui. It's a considered a burden, and it's usur. Now, bearing this in mind, we go back to the case of the tachshite, the issue of the ring with a signet. We saw one source that says that if it has a choysim, it's she's chayeves. That will be according to Rabbi Nechemya, who says the emphasis is placed on the signet, and it's not the derech of women to wear that. And the source that says that that it's a tachshit is according to the Rabbanan, that don't place the emphasis on the signet, but rather focus on the ring. And as such, a ring is a tachshit for a woman. And in their perception, the signet is something subsidiary. There are more. There's more details in this source that are really not germane or relevant to the resolution of the stira, but it's information contained in the source all the same. And it says as follows: Ba'oil haloch achar sam loinov. We're dealing with the ability of different articles to absorb tumah. An oil is a yoke that's worn around an animal's neck and attached to a plow. So a yoke is, will it be kabel tumah? It's dependent on samloinov. Samloinov are pegs that are inserted in the yoke that attaches two boards together between which the animal's neck is inserted. So we look at the samlonov, and if the pegs are made of metal, then the oil will makabel tuma. Bekoilov haloch achar mas meroisa. Bekoilov is a utensil or an article used for hanging clothing. It's something that has a wide base and it narrows, it tapers as it rises. So you can imagine a type of tower-shaped setup that has pegs emerging from it onto which you would hang clothing. Those are the masmerosav. Masmerosav literally are nails. So if these masmerosav are made of metal, so the whole thing is established as something that's makabel tumah. Besulam, a ladder, haloch achar shlivoso. If you evaluate the ladder and its ability to makabel tumah or not, based on the material of the rungs. If the rungs are made of metal, so the whole ladder will makabel tumah. Ba'arsi, arsi is a balance scale, haloch achar shalshalosov. Shalshalosov are the chains from which the balance scale is suspended. V'chachomim omrim hakol haloch achar hamaimid. The chomim disagree, and they say that in order to determine an article's ability to makabel tumah, you look at the substance that is the supporting factor. So in the case of go back to the ring and the signet, if the ring is made of metal, so it is the maimit, it is supporting, it holds the choysim, and then it would be makabel tumah. And this of course is in contrast with Rabbi Nechemya. Now, after all is said and done, just not to forget the forest for the trees, the reason we brought all of this information in was to resolve the Mishnah and the second source that seemed to contradict each other as far as a signet ring, does it constitute a tachshit for a woman or not? According to Rabbi Nechemya, it's not a tachshit, And according to the Rabbanon, it is a tachshit, because they emphasize the ring, the maimid, and not the signet. And the ring, a ring per se, is a tachshit. That's shitas Rabbanon.
Rava, Omar, litzdodin katoi. Rava is another means of resolving the sources, and says there's no contradiction in the first place.
In other words, we had a inference from our Mishnah that if a signet, if a ring has a chosim on it, then it would be considered a masui for a woman. The second, the source that was brought in seemingly contradictory is not contradictory. Rava says you have to read the source litzdodin, means literally two sides. The source is really to be split in referring to two different people as follows. Yeshala choisim, if you have a ring that has a choisim on it, so then tachshit de ish, it functions as a tachshit for a man. It's customary for men to wear signet rings. Ein ole choisim tachshit de isha, if it doesn't have a choisim, then it's a tachshit for an isha. But if it has a choisim, it's not a tachshit for the isha, just like we inferred from our Mishnah. Hence, there's no contradiction. And the third resolution, Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok Omar, Tumo Ashabis Kol Ramis. The source that was brought in as contradicting the Mishnah was not a Shabbos-related source. It was a source dealing with Tumo. So Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok is saying, how can you raise as a contradiction one realm on to another realm when they're totally different realms of halacha? The realm of Tumah has its own standards, and the realm of Shabbos has its own standards. And he explains,
Tumah kli maisa omar rachmona. The Torah says that in order for something to makabel Tumah, it has to be something that has functionality. So as far as a ring is concerned, whether it has a signet on it or not, it has a function. And therefore, it's mekabel tumah. And that's what the source said. It said that rings, whether they have a signet on it or not, are mekabel tumah.
That's in conformity to the Torah standard with regard to tumah. Shabbos, mishum masu yom rachmona. The Shabbos standard is based on whether it is a burden or not.
Ein ole choisim tachshit. If it doesn't have a signet on it, so it's a tachshit. It's ornamental for a woman, and therefore she is. If she wears it out on Shabbos, she's not in Torah in a Torah violation. Yesh ole choisim, but a signet ring with a seal on it for a woman is not a tachshit. It's not decorative. It's not ornamental. Therefore, masui. It's considered a burden on the Shabbos standard. So that even though, with regard to tumah, it's still classified as a tachshit, but that's because it has functionality. But as far as Shabbos is concerned, it's a masui. Let us glance at the Rashi. Tuma, a few lines down from in the Rashi, Tuma Ashabis Kromis, Odikotoni Vatabas, Bain Sheshala Vahule, the source that said a Tabas, whether it has a signet on it or not, Lav Aresha Koi. It's not referring back to the Resha, the Kori Le Tachshit Noshim. It's not referring to the issue of whether or not it is a woman's ornament. Elohochi Ko'omar. Rather, you should understand it thusly. Ketabas she'omru she'nitnemes. The tabas that we say is subject to tumah, bein she'esh ole choisim, skipping the brackets for a moment, bein she'ein ole choisim, whether it has a choisim on it, and let's read the brackets again, the bracketed section in the Rashi, whether it has a signet on it, the lav tachshit hu. It's not a tachshit, mu kli maisu, but it has functionality. Bein she'ein ole choisim, the havi tachshit, it's ornamental, it's mekabel tumah. The chikotoni reisho tachshitei noshim, the reisho that mentions tachshitei noshim, a she'ein oleho choisim. That's referring only to the case of the ring without the signet.
So as far as Tuma is concerned, which was the subject of that, of the source that was raised as contradictory, Tuma applies to all kinds of rings, whether it has a choysim or not. It just so happens that if it has a choysim, so it's not called a tachshit, but it is mekabel Tuma. If it has no choysim, then it is a tachshit. And as far as Shabbos is concerned, if it has a choysim on it, so it is a masui, because a woman doesn't wear that as a tachshit. And if it doesn't have a choysim on it, so it is considered a tachshit. Hence, you see, there is no contradiction. And the main point of this resolution is that the term tachshit enoshim in the Rominu source wasn't referring to the section of that source that said sheyesh olea choysim. That term tachshit enoshim was referring only to the case of ein olea choysim. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.